Okay, yeah. We're going to try and work at having a shorter session today. Sarah's not well. She was doing kids this morning, so they'll be under a little bit more pressure there. I thought actually I'd pick up something quite quickly from the session this morning, which Rolf did. There were just so many things sparking off there. I really appreciated that time together. And it just shows that a stripped down session, music session, can often be just as valuable as others. It's worth thinking about the fact, you know, that Marion keeps a rough head count of how many people from Dayspring are around on a Sunday morning, which is useful to have. And on any Sunday, 30 of the people who are part of Dayspring, around about 30, are not actually here. So you're thinking of what, a third of Dayspring is never actually at an event, and it's always moving around. So that does actually mean that we've got to work out the best ways of helping one another when we're not in a meeting. And so things like using Facebook, posting videos, putting the audio up are all part of that. And I think increasingly we've just got to face the fact that people will need to access that. And I'm going to come back to that in just a minute because there's a connection there. But that's what happened was when that song came up, though, what's it called? We Are One in the Spirit. It's a song that comes from this very distinctive tradition. Okay, so in general, you would expect that to be associated with a group of people and an era. Just in the same way that people would associate Shine, Jesus, Shine with a particular era and a particular context. And one of the things that is really important for us is to be able to affirm things that we don't naturally connect with. Now, we naturally connect with our own tradition. And I was thinking about that with a new album that I've been listening to by a band called The Bright Expression. It's called Bone by Bone, and it's just come out, well, it came out late last year. And they're out of Redding, California. Now, they're a new band. It's their first album. To be honest, not bad, too much of a mix, a bit thin, going from techno to lounge all in one, you know, sort of album, which is not probably the wisest thing to do. Very, very professionally produced and neat from that point of view. And to come to an album like that and not to concentrate too much on whether you like it or not. I think if you're buying it, it's a reasonable thing to do to decide whether you're buying it or not, whether you like it or not. But to think about what is God saying through that particular community. Something that may help you in this is to think about three big sections in the Christian world. I'm particularly thinking of that with regard to this song and also regard to the what you were saying about a Trinity Church, Brenda, as well. So what you've got is you've got the Catholic, you've got the Protestant, and you've got the Pentecostal Charismatic, three big forces in world Christianity. What will happen is if you talk to Catholics or Protestants and say, well, you've got to understand that the Pentecostal charismatic tradition has got equal standing to these other two. If they're in Britain, they will think, well, who do you think you are? But it's where I'd like to start the conversation, because worldwide, most of the Christians who are around are more like us than they are like the Protestant churches or the Catholic churches. If you actually look at worldwide Christianity, that's the way things are. How many of you have got chance so far to see Pentecost Praise from last Sunday? Has anybody watched it through? Yeah, I'd really encourage you to do that, because although it shows you what things are on a bigger scale, I don't know how it struck you, but the thing that struck me is that it was very similar to Dayspring on a much larger scale in terms of its approach. If you actually scaled up what we're doing by 10 times, you'd have the same sort of essential format, songs different, down to even the fact that there was some poor soul at the end of a row when it came to breaking a bread, not sure what to do with the basket that was left over. Well worth actually watching it through. And try it out, watch it again and try it with my analysis on it, and see what the see how that works. But I'd encourage you to do that, and to watch and see what God is saying in different places at different times. So what was happening here in this time in the renewal movement was that people from the Catholic tradition were moving to the Pentecostal tradition. People from the Protestant tradition were moving to the Pentecostal tradition. Now, Trinity Church would be well up here, okay, in its location. We, like most charismatics, would say that we are here, that we cross over. We're evangelical charismatics or charismatic evangelical. I was talking to somebody a few weeks ago, and when they went to their viva for their doctorate, they were actually asked the question, what's the difference between a charismatic evangelical and an evangelical charismatic? And they nearly crashed with their doctorate on that. Because, of course, it's about where you start from. And that's the answer there. So you've got people moving this way. You've also got people moving that way as well. Okay? You've got people moving up here. Okay? Let me give you some examples. Has anybody heard of somebody called Michael Harper? Michael Harper was a key person in the renewal movement in the 1960s and into the 70s. He was curate at All Souls Langham Place. He experienced the spirit. He set up something called Fountain Trust. But he has come right the way from round here over to deciding that he's going, well, actually, he's not become a Catholic. He's become Russian Orthodox. The key issue for him has been the fact that they've appointed women priests in the Anglican Church. And so for him, that is so far against what God wants, he's moved in that direction. Somebody who's moved up in this direction, and I was thinking about this when we sang our last song, is Ian Smale. Okay, Ishmael. Who wrote Father God, I Wonder, and the songs about the glories, did all sorts of other things. And he's moved in that direction. Now, I don't think we need any more examples, but the point that comes out of this is what we've got to try and learn to do is to actually be able to draw from other traditions without being overly influenced by them, holding on to what God has given us. And that fits in with what we're doing at the moment, because all that we talk about the knowing the presence of God is reflected in other parts of the traditions, particularly within the Catholic tradition. There are people there who really are focused on knowing God. And so there are people that we think about, like Julian of Norwich, who was a lady, if I remember rightly, of course, Brother Lawrence, and Madame Guyon, and others back in history who knew God in remarkable ways. There was a scientist or mathematician, certainly a philosopher, called Blaise Pascal. And he tells a story of how God dramatically entered his life. In fact, I think it's a bit of a weird story, but I think I'm right that nobody knew about the story till after he'd died, because it was so important and so secret to him that he got it written out and pinned inside the lining of his coat. He didn't, you know, it was such an important thing to him. So as we come to God and as we say, Lord, I want to know you, we learn from other traditions as well. Of course, we learn from the Bible-based traditions of the Protestant church, from tradition-based of the Roman church as well. And some of us, of course, find it quite difficult to tie all these bits together. But the way in which we tie the different bits together is being really sure of where we are and where we stand and what God has called us to. And that's why, from time to time, we talk about what it means to be charismatic or Pentecostal charismatic or charismatic Pentecostal or charismatic evangelical, in order to make sure that we've got our feet on the ground, as well as our nose poking into what other people are doing in their situations. Now, what I think we should do this morning is actually just do the last section of what I want to talk about. And I'll do the first part in a really quick summary. So, let's have two people up here to help us. Two people have been to Bible college, actually. Marion and Richard, come up the front. Okay. You have 2 minutes between you, like the generation game almost, but much of an age, not 2 years. Yeah? Okay. Okay, books of the Bible, you know about the major prophets, don't you? Know among those prophets about one who was called Daniel. Okay. Can you put up for us a sort of timeline and main things of the book of Daniel between you? You've got 2 minutes to do it, guys. Have a go, see what you can do between the two of you. Daniel, yeah. You needn't have them starting with C all the way through.
They had some visions. Well, he had loads of visions. Visions of there was the statue. And some others.
The corn and the cows is what he was thinking about.
Sorry?
Corn and cows.
No, that wasn't him. That wasn't Daniel. That was someone else. No, he wasn't thrown in the fire, was he? It was his mates.
It's the book of Daniel, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Friends in fire.
Many, many temple parties.
Yes.
That was Sue's speaking in tongues up the back. Going to put that one in.
So there was also then there was the family floating on wall, which was a different king, but I can't remember his name.
Belshazzar.
There we go.
Okay. Now, let's sort of, what was the big dream? Go on, put big dream at the end if you want to.
Big dream. I'm sure there was something that was very significant at the end.
Okay, thank you very much. It's interesting, isn't it, how much you actually know when it comes to it. And of course, if we'd have spent a little longer, we could have probably got there. And if I'd have given them yellow stickies, we could have attempted to sequence it a bit. The thing about the...
Failed our Viva, though.
Pardon?
Have we just failed our Viva?
Can we get an A or a B or a C?
Well, I think you've done pretty well, really. They were captured. What happened, of course, was that the Jewish and Israelite nations were invaded. That was the first thing. They actually then did what lots of nations did and tried to get the most able people, took them away and sent them to civil service college. Probably part of that was that they became eunuchs as well. It's worth thinking about that would have been the way in which things happened. And then early on, they had some conflict with the guys who were training them because they said they weren't going to eat meat. And I don't think it was because they were primarily vegetarians. I think it was part of the the Babylonian religion. Yeah, probably the sacrifice thing, which was very important for Jews. And they went through a bit of a test about that. And then soon after that, because they'd become part of the advisory structure in the country, there was a dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had. They were the only ones who could interpret it. A little while later. Now, when you say a little while later, how far do you think it is? This was a real surprise to me when I checked it out yesterday. From how many years do you think Daniel lived?
70 or 80.
He probably lived 90. Yeah, you know, it was of that sort of... and so this story is spread over a really, really long period. And so these highlights you get in there. But you've got these two big events that... it's not true that everybody knows, but many people know. And that is that his friends ended up in the fire... And Daniel ended up in a lion's den. In both cases, there was a conspiracy to put them in those situations. Read those stories. They rattle along. The first six chapters of Daniel was pretty much easy to read and make a good read. And that covers these three kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar and Darius, who probably was a local governor rather than a king anyway. So those things happen. And what happens is that as a punishment for not observing the religion, the three friends of Daniel get chucked into a fiery furnace. And the story says that the fire was so hot that the people who threw them in got killed as well. And I don't know how far away the king was, but he came down to look, and instead of there being three people, he could see a fourth. And I think the language is beautiful at this point, because it doesn't commit itself, is that there was one who was like the Son of God. Okay? The same sort of story plays itself through in the reign of two kings later, two reigns later, when Daniel is in the same sort of position. And interestingly, he was more of a Catholic or Protestant prayer than a charismatic prayer, in that he had a routine of praying three times in the day. He observed prayer of the hours was praying. And he actually was pretty provoking in the way that he operated, because he insisted on praying not with the windows shut, but out there so everybody could see him. He prayed at the window, I think it says. And the consequence was that he got thrown into a lion's den. Actually, just to... there they are. There's the two big stories. I did actually get round to thinking I would put a voice balloon on each of those lions, because I think I could work out where they were thinking. And I think that the primary thing was the game was that they were trying to make Daniel laugh, particularly that one who's laying on the floor and trying to catch his eye. But, of course, the story becomes quite a strange story, because these lions, who presumably were quite skinny, like this one was over here, were very hungry. They didn't eat Daniel because it says God sent his angel. So you've got these two, if you like, big data points, big factual points where something actually happened. You've got some of these dreams that came true, but on one side you've got these things, and on the other side you've got a bit in the book where it talks about the fact that, let's go through to here, right, where in fact Daniel is explicit about the fact that most of what was happening up here. Okay. Now, when we say we hear from God, most times we don't actually hear an audible voice. It'd be very interesting to know, would anybody here say there has been a time in their life when they've heard God speak to them audibly? Marianne would say that. How many times would you say that's happened?
Once.
Several times, yeah. Definitely once. Twice. Now, you would say that's true. Now, interestingly, that's one of the things that is classic about that. If you do it with any community, it will be women rather than men who would have audible interruptions. I'm glad that we didn't get farther than several times, because when you get it quite a long way, when people hear God's voice a lot, they normally need to take medication for it, if it's out there. So historically, some people actually hear God's voice, literally. But if you're like Daniel, what happens is it happens inside your mind. Now, that is a bit of a struggle for us, because we are always using vocabulary that puts it out here. Okay? Now, when I think, oh, God really spoke to me today, I try to be really careful about that, because people will think I'm saying that I heard a voice. I wish I have heard a voice, although I think I would be pretty frightened if I did. But I've never in my life heard God speak out loud. I have never in my mind seen an external vision. There are people who have done. There are some people who claim to do that a lot. But like Daniel, and I think like most other people in the Bible, most of what happens for me happens internally. And I think for most of you, it's happening for you too. And so the first thing that we want to take forward this morning, and I'm going to go straight into some practice now, is... goodness me, yeah. And this is actually something that comes from a tradition that I'm not quite sure where it fits in that circle, but it comes from the Quaker tradition. And I want us to spend a few minutes holding people in the light. Let me describe to you what I mean. When the Quakers hold somebody in the light, what they do is they bring a person before the Lord. Okay? I don't know whether they hold their hands out. It's a very charismatic thing to do, isn't it? But they hold somebody before God. And they're not particularly bothered about asking God to do things or telling God about what should happen to them. But they're just saying, Lord, this is somebody I love. This is somebody I care about. I'm holding them before you. And as I look round, I can think of so many of you for whom that would be valuable, particularly those of you who've got children. Okay? And I'd just like to suggest to you a couple of approaches to doing this, and we'll spend a few minutes having a go and then reflecting on it. Now, this makes the assumption that God is here, that we can be aware of him, and that very often the an easy way into being aware of God is to come through prayer. Okay, no problem with the logic of that. We believe that God is here. We believe that we can be aware of him. It makes sense that when we start talking to him, we're likely to notice him. There are times, of course, when people talk to somebody who's not there. Wendy does talk to herself at times, and you wonder who's in the house, but she's not. She's carrying on a commentary on what's going on. She also has the ability to carry on talking to me long after I've departed to some other part of the place. Now, so in our human experience, you have to check that somebody's there. And I think it's no bad thing that as we're talking to God, to stop what we're doing and to check that he's there. Okay? There are reasons why some of you may struggle with this. I don't want to talk about this next week, but I do want to talk about it in a couple of weeks' time, because I think getting around the struggles is it demands some discipline. But okay, let me tell you about how this has worked for me this week. So I'm aware of somebody that I care for very much. I'm not totally sure about what is best for them. And I bring them before God. I'm using my hands, I'm reaching out my hands, but the hands bit isn't important. My hands are just an extension of me. You know, when somebody does surgery on Roy this week, he won't thank the surgeon's hands for doing the surgery. He'll thank the surgeon. And if you put your hands out or if you don't put your hands out, it's just an extension of you. And I, as I'm driving, I don't put my hands out in front of me, although Wendy wouldn't be surprised if I did, because the amount of time she thinks I spend without my hands on the steering wheel. But she does that too, but she never notices it when she's doing it. But as I put out my hands, I begin to hold somebody before the Lord. Let me choose an easy example, and I think of the fact that I've done this during the week with you guys. Several of you guys I've been aware of doing this. And on this morning, I'm driving to my parents, and I'm holding them before the Lord. And I begin to say, well, don't shut my eyes, still on the motorway, Lord, here's Mum. And I'm holding her in your light. Lord, do something for her. Let her know that you're present. Help her. Let her find good things about you. Let her be blessed today. And then gradually I'll shift on to someone else. But what I'd like you to do this morning is to look and do this, but to actually concentrate on just one person. If you drift off, comes back to another. It happens with my kids as well. Now, those of you who've got adult children will know this, that you never stop being concerned for them. Right? We have a son who is 42, 43? 43, 44? Getting on. Simon. 43. And Wendy wanted me, she actually phoned me from out shopping, to make sure that I phoned him up to check that he had booked a hotel correctly and had made sure he'd got the right beds in the right rooms. Okay. However he manages to run a church and live his life and so on, you don't, but that's what it's like being a parent. You never quite let go As people go on, in fact, it's one of the things that delights my oldest granddaughter, that she will catch interactions between my mother and I. My mother thinks that she's got a divine right to tell me off about everything, from the state of the polish on my shoes through to my spelling and grammar. This is where you are as parents. So when you're praying for your child, when you're holding your child in the light, one of the things you need to do is to detach yourself from helpful commentary and criticism. Okay? And we hold somebody before the Lord. And as we hold them before the Lord, you could actually use the vocabulary rather than holding them in the light to lift them up before God. Okay, that would be a bit more Protestant, wouldn't it? Lord, we lift our brother up before you. But holding them in the light seems to me to be a good thing. And I'm just suggesting that for the few minutes that we've got, we do that at the moment. Now, with some of you, I can pretty much say who you're going to hold before the Lord at the moment. Others of you, I don't know. Might be somebody who's a long way from you. Might be somebody who seems to be a long way from God. But you can hold them in the light. And so, if you'd like to pray for a moment, just to give some background noise, I'm going to put some music on, and then we'll see how we go. So let's just do that. Let's close our eyes. Let's be before the Lord, and let's hold somebody in the light, believing that something real is happening. Okay? Just for 2 minutes. Okay, 2 minutes isn't long enough, really, for this. But let me just ask you a couple of things. I don't want to ask you about the detail of this. But first of all, let me ask, how many of you found that helpful? Yeah? Okay. Some of you would have found it more difficult. What happened when you actively tried to avoid asking things or telling God about the person? Did you manage to do that, to just hold somebody before the Lord without asking things? Sorry, let me turn this down. Were you going to say?
I think I became more aware of what God's already done.
Yeah.
Surrounding that person, and you know, what, you know, yeah. You know, lots of things.
I found it really quite remarkable that as I hold somebody before the Lord, the confidence that grows in me that God is doing something is really valuable. So that probably corresponds with that. I also become aware that my analysis of the situation may not be quite as correct as I think it is. That God may be wanting to do something different to the things that I have in mind. Now, this is a difficult question. I don't know whether we get an answer for this for anybody. When you were doing that, inside your head, what was your posture? Anybody?
Looking to the Lord.
That's where you were. But what would be the closest way of describing your posture? Were you sitting? Were you standing? Were you walking? Were you laying down? Mm-hmm. What would be the closest way of describing that?
Sitting.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? I think that business of being seated together with Christ in heavenly places is a really important metaphor. And I sort of half want to apologise for the rather random way in which I'm speaking at the moment, and half don't want to apologise because I'm quite pleased with the fact that what I'm trying to do at the moment is share with you what God's sharing with me, or at least I think he's sharing with me, although no doubt I will find that some of the things I've been quite sure of, I'm not so sure of later on. But then you're like that too, so we just have to live with that. Can you try and take that away this week and add that to dealing with situations from a place seated with Christ, holding people in the light? And I know that for you who are struggling, stopping struggling and holding is going to be really quite valuable. Those of you who have got large families, like Brenda, will probably have to take a complete week off work or every other activity to get through all of them. But just try some, one or two. And the thing that surprises me, even as I was praying with you, it was quite difficult because I was praying for you as well as with you as I was doing it, I was quite surprised at who I found I was holding in the light. So you can start from determining beforehand. You can start from expressing it, working at it later on. And I would love to hear from you at any point ways in which it's working, and just as much ways in which you're finding it difficult as well. So that's enough for this morning. Thanks, and thanks once again, Rolf, for getting us off to such a good start in leading the music. Thank you.